This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two here on a Throwback Thursday. Glad you could be with us. We are celebrating the music of Canada. Well, at least the stars of music from Canada. Because on this date in 1993, the Montreal Canadiens won the Stanley Cup. Beat the LA Kings, who were led by Wayne Gretzky. And that was the last time the country of Canada had a team that won the Stanley Cup, all the way back in 1993. We're also getting into the NBA Finals, Game 3, and again, the Celtics used what they were to get a victory, but can they sustain that into Game 4? These series are really good when they're about adjustments. You strike, we strike back, you strike, we strike back, and that's so far what we've seen the Celtics do in these playoffs, whether it was against Milwaukee, against Miami, and now with Golden State. It's not exactly what Golden State has done en route to the finals. They dispatched Dallas with relative ease. They had a couple of bumps in the road against Memphis, but nothing too big. And of course, they dispatched Denver in five games. But for the Celtics, this is kind of a similar pattern that we've seen in this postseason. They win a game one or they lose a game one, but they bounce back. Win a game, lose a game, then bounce back. And they've done that really since middle of January when they started this run to be one of the better teams in the NBA, if not playing the best basketball of any team in the NBA from that point on, is that they respond well from losing. But can they get the momentum of this series so that they can avoid having it tied up before they go back to San Francisco? Or can they take a commanding 3-1 lead? That's yet to be determined because we're not 100% sure there is any momentum when they play in any of these series. But there was a bright spot for what the Celtics had done last night, which is utilize what their strengths were in this game. Strengths that are not going away. They are bigger, they are faster, they are quicker, and they are younger. Those facts aren't going to change because Golden State makes an adjustment or two. Golden State just has to play knowing that those things are not in their favor. Those boxes are not checked in their favor. They've done this before. They did it in Game 2 when Boston tried to play a different style of basketball that fit into what Golden State wanted to do. Last night, they changed it and played the basketball in which they exploited what Golden State could not do, which was rebound well and defend well in the paint. All right, we'll get to the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next. Hit us up on Twitter. You can hit us up at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call. Sports Map Radio's Throwback Thursday continues.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Throwback Thursday. You know, today's the day where we're celebrating the songs from Canadian artists in honor of the 1993 Stanley Cup champion Montreal Canadiens, the last Canadian team to win the Cup. That's a good, but what is the good of the day, which might be even better?
I don't know if it's going to be better. Some, you know, it all depends on what you think of this place. But the fast food experience might be revolutionized.
Uh-oh.
Might be in the process of being
just
revolutionized.
Just when I got familiar with the way they're doing it now.
Yeah, because Taco Bell has decided to say, you know, to open up a new restaurant in Minnesota. We'll try to get as close to Canada as possible.
Right.
You know, to help you Canadians out. But in Minnesota, Brookfield Park, Minnesota, I don't even know where that is. It's a two-story Taco Bell, okay? But the bottom floor or the down floor is the drive-thru lanes. And they have four of them.
Oh, my God.
And it's all high-tech. So the restaurant is up above. The drive-thru lanes are down below. And then three lanes are going to be dedicated to mobile orders and delivery food service company.
Okay.
You know, like,
okay.
You know, so it's
DoorDash, those kind of places,
yeah, those
plus
places.
People going through a drive-thru.
Right. And then they have the traditional drive-thru lane, but their main objective here is to get your food, have your whole experience to be less than 2 minutes. It's like going down pit row for your food.
I'm going to ask you a question because I'm experiencing this in my little small town outside of Nashville.
Go for it.
Which is this. A lot of times you're like, I just want to get a quick burger or I just want to get a chicken sandwich or whatever. These restaurants are like, yeah, I'm sorry, it's taken so long. We only have two people here.
Right.
Like, is there enough employees, or can they entice enough people, young people, to work there to for that kind of operation? I mean, it's not just a small little, hey, we need like seven people. Like, that sounds like you need like 30, 40 people.
It does.
Doing all of those things.
It does. I'm
curious,
too.
Running the drive-thru, running the lane, cooking all the food, making sure it's all fast, making sure people you're handling up front. Are they going to have the staff, or is it, because this would be a waste of space if it's like, well, one drive through works. We had four because we thought it would be awesome, but we can't get the kids to work here.
Right. And the other thing I don't want too is because it's a lift elevator situation going on where the food will be dropped down, because you're not going to be handed to. The food won't be handed by a person.
It's in like one of those tube things.
Yeah. But it'll be like a little elevator that pops down. You open the door, there's your food, you put it back in. That's the other problem, too, is that how often will that break down?
Right.
All
if
of a sudden,
ice cream machines go down, tube that delivers food is absolutely going to break down.
So, I mean, there's a lot of questions with this, but if it does work out, expect your fast food experience to change.
Without question. That does sound good. Look, that sounds great. I mean,
also, it's a massive building, so I don't think it's going to replace the one that's in your town.
Right.
Just
right.
Letting you all
know.
So it's
only going to be in
select areas, yeah.
Select areas.
I mean, you
got to
think about a parking lot where it has four drive-through lanes.
We have two Taco Bells in my town. We have more food places for the town our size. There's more places to eat. Nobody, I've said this many times. I live in Spring Hill, Tennessee. No place on earth likes to go out to eat more than Spring Hill, Tennessee. All the restaurants are packed all the time. Like, nobody cooks. Nobody makes food at home. Nothing. We have two Taco Bells, and they're both those Taco Bells that you find within a larger parking lot. Like, have you ever seen not really a strip mall. I'm not going to go that big. But it's like the food place, the grocery store, a couple of, like, hair salons, a exercise place. And, oh, by the way, stuck in the parking lot, coordinated off, is a Taco Bell. So it's got like less real estate. But if they were to say, we'll build one of these bad boys, forget it. They'd have to tear down everything. People would love it. So, all right. So what's the bad of the day?
All right. Bear with me here, okay? Because I'm going to set this up, but it may not be what you think it is. Because it was announced yesterday that Bryson DeChambeau and Patrick Reed are off to the LIV tournament.
Yeah.
Live tournament.
Is this official or is this just...
Well, I know that they both agreed that they're going to play in the Portland, pumpkin patch? What's it called?
Pumpkin. Yeah. Linus is on the 13th hole waiting for midnight so that the great pumpkin can give all
That's
sorts
right.
of... Yeah, exactly. And Sally is beating the hell out of him because she gave up tricks or treats. Yeah, it's a pumpkin ridge.
Pumpkin ridge.
That's
Thank
awesome.
Thank you. But that's not the bad. Not is the bad. The bad is not the fact that they're making the jump to the tour. The bad is the amount of reports that came out on just how insufferable these two are.
Yeah, I know.
And that PGA was like, "Oh, yeah, they're going. Okay,
you can have these two."
Yeah,
yeah.
That's got to be a bad look.
You want to take? Yeah. By the way, Kevin Na has a reputation of being one of the slowest golfers on tour.
Right.
These two are just. One is very disliked. Patrick Reed is very disliked.
Would you say hated?
Yeah, hated is probably a good word.
I mean, he's been, how many times has he been accused of cheating?
Cheating all through college and even in his professional career, there's been enough people raising an eyebrow. But Bryson DeChambeau is just a little too, he's a little too much, right? Like he goes, oh God, I get it. E equals MC squared. Good Lord. All right. Just swing the club. Holy cow. Whoa. I get it. A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Just hit the ball. Like he's a little too much. And I think the PGA Tour is like, yeah, you want to take these guys off our hands. We wouldn't mind that whatsoever.
As the article reads, it was a gut punch to the PGA Tour. But there was, however, an accompanying emotion pulsing through PGA Tour circles on Wednesday. The type of relief that comes at the end of a turbulent and often toxic relationship.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau tried to sell his injury as a ping pong accident.
Yeah.
Right? No, it has nothing to do with swinging the club 250 miles an hour. Has nothing to do with that. No. Not at all. He was diving for a ping pong ball, and that's why he's hurt. Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
I just
take
find
that
it.
And roll with it.
I mean, how bad is it when the company that you – I mean, it's literally the company that you worked for was like, yeah. God, I'm so happy that person left.
There was a few more LIV Golf press conferences yesterday. These guys have no idea how to answer these questions.
True.
None. Somebody asked Lee Westwood, if Vladimir Putin was hosting a golf tournament, would you play in that? And he goes, I don't want to deal in hypotheticals. I'm like, oh, is that an answer? Is that really a good answer? Phil looks like he just rolled out of a cave. What is up with that?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Like, instead of being on hiatus in Rancho Santa Fe, California, in his mansion, he looks like he just rolled out of Red Rock. Like eating berries and squirrels. What is he doing?
Or he just went on a 5-date fish tour bender.
Right, exactly. Phil is going to be 52 years old. As a guy who's up there myself, there are moments where your kids sometimes have to pull you back a little bit and go, Dad, that's not, no, Dad, I know you're trying to look young. That's not, not working. Somebody should have told Phil this. That scruff looks like he's trying way too hard. Just be yourself. Be who you are. Be your image. Yeah. What are you doing hiding behind a 5 o'clock shadow? What's wrong with you, Phil? He looks like he's just lost. He looks confused.
He does.
He really does. He looks very uncomfortable. Just the couple of shots that I've seen, the video I've seen, he doesn't look like he's like, I had to commit to this, but I'd rather be anywhere but here. I don't want to be doing this. Yeah, it's going to be interesting today when they tee that off. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
I'm not gonna say he was dumb for this. I mean, it's a decision that you make that, in hindsight, you'll regret.
Okay.
All right, and that goes to John Elway.
John Elway, yeah.
Yeah, he made a decision in 1998 when he was offered to buy 20% of the Broncos. He turned it down. Had he done that, he would have netted himself $1 billion.
I would love to go back in time. And find out what in 1998 made him think that a 20% investment was a bad deal.
Right.
Like, what made him go, I don't know if this NFL thing is going to make it. It's not like he's investing 20% in his cousin's upstart oyster business or something like that. Like, hey, I'm going to have oyster food trucks.
I mean,
like, you want to give us 20, you want 20% of this, Uncle John? It's not like that.
It is confusing because, you know, he knows the organization. I mean, he played for him for years.
Absolutely.
98 was the year he retired, right?
He knew the NFL was a rocket ship.
Well, not just the NFL. I'm just saying let's just take the Broncos in general.
Well, you got to make this. You can't have a rocket ship without the league being a rocket ship.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you know, owning part of the Broncos, his team that, you know, gave him everything. Seems logical.
Well,
apparently,
I'll pull back a second on that. If it was a bad investment, it doesn't matter if he played for them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if the NFL was struggling to make a buck, but he just managed to have a nice career there, won some Super Bowls, but he looked at the numbers like, even when we win Super Bowls, we lose money.
Like, if you're looking at the CFL.
Right. Like, if it was a business.
Bring Canada back
like,
in.
20% of that, if it wasn't. If the league was struggling, like, to make money and the teams weren't making money, then you could say, well, it didn't matter that I played for you. I'm not investing my money into it. Like, you gave me money, but it doesn't mean I'm going to own this. It's not a good business deal. But what in 1998 made him think the NFL was a bad investment?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed to be in 1998, things were rolling along great for the league.
And now,
it may be better now, but it wasn't like it was terrible in 98.
Yeah, first of all, I thought maybe it was costing him too much, but a 20% stake back then would have cost him $36 million.
Okay, that's nothing. He was making that on his car dealerships.
Yeah.
I think he had car dealerships back then when he was playing. I think he invested his money well.
Other endorsements. I mean,
he could have come.
$36 million. I mean, I'm not saying it's a drop in the hat for him, but you know, it definitely was.
Well, let's also remind people he wasn't making $30 million a year.
No, right? No. Yeah,
like, in terms of like on field.
That's why I'm not saying it was. You know, he could have. He earned that much on contracts alone. No way. But yeah, I mean, all the other outside businesses
sure,
that he had.
Sure. He invested his money well.
I think you're going to come up with $36 million in that.
But even then, wouldn't you find a way to borrow it to get this investment and use that as...
Yeah.
Like, because you must have seen... He had to have seen where the league was going. It was... Again, I get it. It's not as good... It wasn't as good then as it is now, obviously. Media rights have increased exponentially. Values of teams have increased exponentially. But in 1998, what made him think it wasn't going to increase in value? And like we said before... An opportunity to be a part owner of something very, very few people get to be a part of. Like we say it all. Mark Zuckerberg, if the NFL says you are never buying an NFL team, he's never buying an NFL team.
Yes,
you can't get in without the approval of the owners. If all 31 owners say, no, we never want to give Mark Zuckerberg an opportunity to buy in this league, he never gets in. No, he could be a trillionaire and never get in to this league. They say that Robert Walton, it's going to take 60 to 90 days for this sale to approve. Why isn't it like tomorrow?
And that's right? I wonder if, you know, like if, I mean, behind closed doors, if Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk have ever said, you know, I'll buy a team.
Yeah.
And all the owners are like, no, we don't want you in it.
No. And a lot of millionaires.
And it's just kept quiet.
Like, a lot of people who used to buy teams, who tried to buy teams. One of the problems, Mark Cuban pointed this out, one of the problems was they weren't liquid. You have to be liquid, right? Meaning you have to be able to go to the bank and get the money in a suitcase, a duffel bag, or whatever. Like, you can't have it in assets. Like, you can't have it like, well, I'm a billionaire on paper through real estate and other things. You have to be like, no, it's $3.5 billion. We need your $3.5 billion.
Yeah.
That's why when Don Sterling sold his team to Steve Ballmer, Steve Ballmer was like, oh, liquid? Yo, no problem. $2.5 billion? No problem.
Let me write you a check.
Yeah, I'll go get that. Whereas other owners who were buying for the Clippers were like, well, and if you watched Winning Time, and I hope you do, when Dr. Jerry Buss was buying the Lakers, he was trying, like, he struggled, at least according to the way the story is. Jeff Perlman wrote the story. He was selling this. He had to give Jack Kincook a building. He was like liquidating things. He was borrowing against credit. Like he needed the capital, and he didn't have the capital. So it seems like, I don't know. Let me just give everybody an advice. If you have an opportunity to buy an NFL team, buy it.
Buy it.
Even if you're like, ooh, I mean, we might be eating ramen noodles for a year or two. Just buy one.
Yeah.
Just buy whatever it might cost you.
Because, I mean, so, that $36 million that you said with inflation and blah, 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 would have netted him $900
million. Yeah. Oh, God.
$36 million turned into $900 million. That's a sound
in a relatively
investment.
Short amount of time. 20,
yeah.
25 years.
Yeah.
Golly. That's crazy.
Where do I sign?
All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, and a throwback. Who's this?
This is Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne?
Yes.
She's Canadian, too?
She's Canadian.
Do we have anybody in our country that sings songs?
No.
Okay.
They're all from the other side. Underwood's
Canadian, I'll be like, what? I thought she was from Oklahoma.
Well, that's what they say.
That's what they say.
Now, I learned this yesterday, and I had no idea, but apparently there's a conspiracy theory surrounding Avril Lavigne.
About what?
She's dead.
What?
And that the Avril Lavigne you see today is just a replacement of the Avril Lavigne of the, what, late 90s, early 2000s?
How could you get away with that? If you really wanted to pull that off, how could you get away with that? Do you think that would work?
No!
Remember they said that about Paul McCartney?
Yes.
Like, how... Let's say that's exactly what you wanted to do. Like, is there a movie about this? Did anybody write a screenplay about this where a rock star dies in a drug overdose in a hotel room with like four prostitutes and they go, oh, this is not good, but we can't let the money train go. And they find a guy that looks just like him and they train him to be a replacement, you know, singer, songwriter / musician.
No, but I think I'd watch it.
I think I'd watch it too. But I don't think it would be a comedy. Movie. I think you could make it a serious movie. Like, what would you do if you said, there is no way we're giving up this $1 billion train. We have got to keep it going. And so let's figure out a way to smuggle in somebody who looks like this person who is, I mean, would it have to be one of those things where, like, he has no family, nobody would even know he was gone? Like, would it be one of those things? Like we see a lot of times in those assassin movies or hitmen movies, or when the government hires somebody to, you know, go on a mission, and like, he has no family, nobody will miss him. Like, would you have to find that person?
Probably, right? Yeah, just find, like, it's like almost like the Prince and the Pauper story, except
very,
you know,
much so, yeah.
Except the prince is dead.
Yeah, right. Except the prince is dead, and now this is you permanently. Exactly. Wow, what a weird conspiracy. Does Avril Lavigne know this? Does she go, oh, sorry, I'm not dead. I'm actually the same person that you know and love.
Honestly. I don't know if she's ever, I have never heard it. I never heard that. My wife was telling me, she's like, oh, you're going to play her? She's dead. And I was like, no, she's still alive. She's like, you don't know the story? And I'm like, no.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, maybe there is something to this.
Yeah. It's even Wikipedia even has a page. Avril Lavigne replacement conspiracy theory.
Wow. If Wikipedia has it, it must be true.
That she died in 2003 and was replaced by a body double named Melissa Vandella.
Okay. Real quick question. And I'm not, this is no knock on Avril Lavigne at all. But if that's easy to do, not easy to do, but you could do it if you put a little work and effort into it. How come we lost like Aaliyah and all these other people? Like, oh, she died in a plane crash. I guess you can't really hide that. But wouldn't you have found an Amy Winehouse impersonator to take over that role?
Of course.
Wouldn't you find some people that were really, really super talented? Would you be like, yeah, well, we're not giving up yet. Let's find somebody that looks like them and kind of make it sound like them. You could do the whole Milli Vanilli thing. Like, just ever lip sync to songs until she gets, I don't know, do whatever you want to do. Seems weird. Imagine if we did that in sports. Like, if something tragic happened to, like, a star quarterback and we were like, well, we got to find somebody who looks like them and throws like them.
Well, maybe Tom Brady's been replaced like 17 times.
Maybe. Oh, God. What a weird business the music business is.
Because one man can't just win all those Super Bowls.
Does it feel like the music business, and I'm not in it, so I don't know much about it. I mean, I live in Nashville, and I know some people who are in it. Doesn't it feel like it's like the most corrupt business?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, everything I hear about the music business, it's just exploitation, corruption, people making money on things they have nothing to do with, other than their name is in a contract.
I don't understand now how musicians make the money. I understood it back like in the 80s and 90s. Sure. Everyone bought CDs. Everyone bought cassette tapes. You bought the records. I understand that there was money being driven to it. Today, like we sign up for music streaming service, and we pay just a monthly fee. And it's not that much. It's like under $10. But we can download every song we want to.
Yeah. So,
and that doesn't make any sense to me that, you know, we're paying – just our little family paying you like, you know, I don't even know. I want to say like $10 a month.
Like, think about this.
You have a big mansion because I'm paying you $10 a month? I don't get it.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. There are guys here in Nashville who live in the posh, rich Brentwood community in huge houses who never wrote a song, who never sang a lick, who never played a musical instrument. They're just some executive within some company that somehow got his name in the piece of the pie where the money just gets, he might do one thing, but he's in the club that they go, when you're successful, all of these other people get successful too. And they've made millions off nothing more than doing something for the record company that allows them to share in the royalties, and yet are not musicians. Yeah. They don't play an instrument. They don't sing. They didn't write the song. They did nothing, but they might have done one little tiny thing that's like, and he's entitled to this.
No, I feel like the music business is a lot like mattress stores.
Right.
Right. They're all over the place.
They're all everywhere.
Yet no one's ever in them.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Good point. Good point. All right, coming up, more on the NBA Finals and another controversy brewing in Washington. We got that for you coming up next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is Alanis Morissette. I knew she was Canadian.
Yep.
I did know that. Again, celebrating the 1993 Montreal Canadiens on this date, they won the Stanley Cup, and the country of Canada did not have another team win the cup after that. And I always thought...
Still waiting.
They must be... It must drive them crazy, though, that the cup... If it'd be one thing if, like, the Rangers, the Bruins, the Blackhawks, the Flyers...
Yeah, if they consistently...
Detroit.
Chicago.
If they consistently... Pittsburgh. If they consistently won it. But it's like, here in Carolina, we won the Stanley Cup. We don't even know what this is. And same thing in Tampa. Let's see. Colorado's won it twice.
LA.
Dallas. L.A.
Then Anaheim. The Ducks won it, right?
Yep, the Ducks won it. So, like... It must make them like head scratching. Like, what?
Well, that and also, you know, it's like a lot of their teams. You know, there was the expansion teams that won. Like we pointed out earlier, the Avalanche.
Yep, left Quebec, became the Avalanche. Tampa Bay was a new team in the early 90s. They've now won it three times. So, ugh, must drive them crazy.
And on the verge of winning it three in a row.
They could win it three in a row. They're playing that well. They got Game 5 tonight at the Garden between the Rangers and the Lightning. With it tied up at 2. One good thing, by the way, here's a little interesting hockey stat I found out yesterday. The Rangers are converting 32% of their power play opportunities. They have a power play goal in 8 of their last 9 playoff games. So there you go. That's your hockey stat of the day. There you go. Take it into Game 5 however you wish. Game 4 of the NBA Finals will be on Friday night. It's a very quick turnaround. Normally, they like to do this thing where they play on one day and then like 3 days later they play. But here's the weekend and they want to get, you know, a few, they want to get a Friday night game in. So they play Wednesday night and then a quick turnaround for Game 4 on Friday. And that's, is that enough for Steve Kerr to get to figure out how does he get more physical? How does he grow like a couple more inches on each player in order to counter the Celtic size and quickness and physicality? Boy, Boston was physical last night. Holy cow. That's a lot of reasons Draymond Green fouled out, but it was also a lot of reasons that he instigated trying to get fouled out. So, but it was a very, like, outside of the third quarter woes, which are still plaguing Boston in this series, where they just give up. They did it in Game 1. They did it in Game 2. Definitely did it in Game 2. That was the game changer right there. And they almost did it in Game 3 last night. They almost gave it up in the third quarter, where Golden State came out a-roaring, had a 7-point possession, a 10-0 run, and was able to get the lead very briefly before Boston sort of settled down a little bit. But they had a big lead at halftime, and they almost gave that away because Golden State fought back in the third. And that's what Golden State does. They just didn't sustain it going into the fourth quarter. But if this is what Boston is in terms of their physicality and their size and quickness and youth, they'll win this series. But I really am curious on Friday night how Golden State responds. Because Steve Kerr is a brilliant guy, and he's got good players on his team. He's too talented of a team to roll over in 5 games. I don't think many of us are thinking that that's going to happen here. But it could. I mean, the series could get away from them. They could lose Game 5 down 3-1, and Boston just finds a way to go to San Francisco for Game 5 and win that. And they're done in 5. And that's how quick these series can get away from you if you're not careful. Game 4 is the most important game in a 7-game series. The series is either going to end, somebody's going up 3-1, or it's tied up 2-2, and it's best 2 out of 3. So this is a critical game, not just because Golden State is, it's Game 4 is a critical every series, right? In every series. So Friday's no exception. I mean, Golden State has to win, or they're not going to win the NBA Finals. I know that they had a 3-1 lead at one point, and Cleveland got it back. They were down 3-1 against Oklahoma City in the playoffs in 2016. They ended up winning that series. 3-1 is a lot easier to do than 3-0 because no one's ever come back from 3-0. But I'm telling you, this Boston team's too good. They're not going to lose 3 in a row. All right? Listen, they are what, 14-0? 14-0 after losses? Right? They're not going to – something along those lines, I think. They're not going to lose 3 straight games. They don't lose back-to-back games. So you'd have to beat them 3 times if you're down 3-1. You're not going to do it. I don't care if you're Golden State or anybody else. You're not going to do it against this team, especially the team knows, as I said this earlier, the Celtics know who they are. They know they're better than Golden State. They know they're better than Golden State on paper. They have things that work for them that doesn't work for the Warriors. And I think that's going to be the key going forward on Friday, is how does Steve Kerr and the Warriors go, okay, we see your size, we see your aggressiveness, we see your physicality, we see your height, but we've got these things that work for us, and we're going to use those. And in the end, we win this game, even though you have these advantages. We'll see. We'll see. All right, so there is a issue in Washington. Jack Del Rio has gotten himself into some trouble with some comments that he made about the Capitol riots on January 6th of 2021. So he was addressing a tweet, a tweet that he had sent, either resent or sent out. They were asking him about it. And in the process of talking about it to the media, he had mentioned that he ended up calling the riots a dust up, right? And he talked about that in the summer of 2020, with the BLM riots and the protests of George Floyd's death, that there was a lot of destruction, that people's livelihoods were being destroyed, buildings being burned down. Now I'm quoting from him. No problem. And then we have a dust up at the Capitol, nothing burned down, and we're going to make that a major deal. I just think that it's kind of two standards. We apply the same standard, or we're going to be reasonable with each other. Let's have a discussion. That was all. Let's have a discussion. Okay, so there was a lot of people saying, hey, whoa, slow down a little bit. While some can say, yeah, you know what? It's too bad that some of what was going on in the summer of 2020 ended up being destruction of property, looting, and some violence, even though a lot of the protests were peaceful, but there was enough violence in the summer of 2020 to make people raise an eyebrow as to why that exactly occurred. I don't think Del Rio was in a very knowledgeable place about the Capitol riots, because calling them a dust up, it really wasn't a dust up. Now, you can argue sort of the sort of level of violence that occurred there, but it wasn't a dust up. And now he's in a little bit of trouble. Now, let me say this. I think that when sports and politics mix, it becomes very complicated, because it's not a realm and it's not a world a lot of people in the sports world get into very often, right? So, again, if you talk to a political pundit, somebody who makes their career covering politics, covering the political world, covering elections, covering politicians, the laws, etc., they can say pretty dumb things, even though that's their life 24/7. That's what they cover. That's what they follow. That's what they're into. They go to Real Clear Politics. They go to CNN. They go to Fox. They go to MSNBC. I don't want to miss any news service, so if I missed any news service, I'm sorry. But they go to those sites. They read the opinions of people on both sides, and even they can say ridiculous things. A lot of times when we get into the sports world, we sometimes find athletes that say smart things, coaches say smart things that really are knowledgeable. They say, look, I've studied this. I understand this. I know about this. And then there's a couple of times where, because that's not really their wheelhouse, they say things that come within the bubble that they're existing in. And I think that's the problem. And again, I'm not trying to say Jack Del Rio, because I don't know Jack Del Rio. I don't know how much he has spent on these issues. I don't know how much research he's done, how much information he absorbs on this. But I do know that we can all, every one of us, left or right, can fall within the bubble of our own sphere and our own understanding of a topic, right? Where we only hear the things that come to us that we want to hear. We buy conspiracy theories because they come from people we trust more than others, right? And it doesn't matter what side of the political fence you're on. I think a lot of us can do that, right? If you take any issue in America, you can look through the lens of gun control in one way. You can look through the lens of it in another way. But if you live in the bubble of one way or the other, you tend to repeat the talking points of those people within the bubble. And I think Jack Del Rio did that here, because even, I'm not going to say those weren't his exact words. Maybe he came up with the word dust up, right? Maybe that's a phrase he came up with. But when I read this comment, I can't help but think how much of this is influenced by just people that he is following more closely on the political scale than anybody else. That's not to excuse it, because I do think it wasn't a dust up. And I do think his apology was in order, because I do think that was a serious moment in the country. I personally, I do. Now, do I think Jack Del Rio should be fired over this? No. I think he has an apology. I think he was sincere in that apology. I think what he said, I think he was saying something that was, would have been an interesting conversation if it was phrased right. And I do think that we do have a problem, and that we don't get into discussions anymore. And I think that is kind of too bad. Right. I can remember so many fun conversations that I had with friends in the political debate. Now, when I went to college, we were going through the Gulf War, the first war. Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait. And I remember I was kind of on the more left side. I was on the no blood for oil side. You know, I didn't want to go to war and all of that. And I had friends. My roommate was in ROTC. He made a career in the Air Force, ended up retiring, really high honors, was over in Iraq number of times. But him and I, we'd have these long conversations about it that never went beyond just two guys, two really good friends disagreeing. We lost a lot of that. I think Jack Del Rio makes a good point. I think he makes a good point about the destruction and the businesses being burned down. But I don't think, and I think like, hey, have a peaceful protest, support what you want to support. You don't need to burn the city down, which a lot of people didn't burn the city down. There were a few who did, but not every city was on fire and not every protester burned everything to the ground. There were legitimate people protesting in the summer of 2020 that didn't light one thing on fire. A lot of people did. And I also think that in order to classify January 6th as just a dust up at the Capitol, I think that is not being truly honest about what occurred there either. So I think you take both of these things and then you exaggerate them to fit your narrative that you fit in the bubble. And I think that's where Del Rio sort of erred here. But I don't think he deserves to be fired over this. I think a simple apology is all really what he has to do. And that's what he did. He did apologize for this. I would have conversations with people that were like the players that he's coaching. If they had a problem with what he said about the summer of 2020, whether they have a problem with what he said about the Capitol riots, I think he needs to sort of sit down with them and sort of say, hey, this is what I was thinking. This is what I was saying. Because one other factor here that I think it's overlooked with the people that are really, really outraged by this, right? And fine, if you are, that's fine. If you were really angry at Jack Del Rio, you never want to see him or hear from him again, and the commanders have to part ways with him, that's fine. I can't argue against that. That's how you feel. But I have to tell you something. As a member of the media, a lot of us in this field, and I've been to 1,000 press conferences, way too many to count, there's always somebody that is trying to get something out of who they're talking to. They're trying to get the gotcha question in, right? They're trying to make news with the question they're asking. And there is always by some, I shouldn't say always, but by some athletes, coaches, and executives in sports, a fight back against that. So you can be you feel like you can be a little bit more flippant in your answer and a little bit more aggressive in your answer. And I think Del Rio did that. I think he was seeing the bait. He was seeing the trap. He kind of walked into it with his aggressiveness in talking about it. And then he went to some talking points that he may have seen on social media within its own bubble. And I think it spun out of control from there. That's not to excuse it, because I think saying a dust up at the Capitol, me personally, I think it's stupid. I think that's ridiculous. Call it what it was. I mean, it may not be an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10 to some people, but it wasn't a 2. All right, can we all agree on that? All right, it wasn't like a couple of people. I mean, it was a serious thing. And even people on the right condemned it. And there's a lot of people on the right who condemned it. This wasn't a dust-up, all right? Dust-up would be like if one person broke through a window. All right, that's not what happened. So again, it may not be the most egregious thing ever in the history of the United States, but it's not something to just bypass either. He elevated one, and he exaggerated one in his elevation of the problem of the summer of 2020, and then he downplayed another. The gap is too big, and I think it came from three things: being in his own bubble, being a little aggressive by hearing a gotcha question, maybe not being as informed on either one of those as he probably should have been, and then feeling like what he was saying was making sense when it just sort of dragged him in deeper and deeper and further into controversy. Lose his job? No, it's too extreme. I think a good apology is all that's needed, and then I think everybody could move on. All right, it's my Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
In the well, don't ask me, I'll never tell. I look to you as it fell, and now you're in my way.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1993 on a Throwback Thursday, Canada, the Canadiens win the Stanley Cup. We're doing Canadian artists. What's this young lady's name again?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This was popular, like, I want to say 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did she make anything of herself? Did she?
I think she released like another song. There was another song that she had that hit the charts, but I think she's down the one-hit wonder.
I got you.
What this song reminds me most is the, I think it was the 2012 U.S. swim team.
Oh, okay.
Because they had, that was like Missy Franklin's first go around, and, you know, but she did a whole video of all the swim team, and they all lip-synced this song. They did a whole
thing. Oh, how cute.
But it was like different shots in London.
Well, did they know that Carly Rae Jepsen was Canadian?
No, I don't know. I don't think they
wouldn't have chose that song. If they knew she was Canadian.
That's very true. You would have chosen
United States women's swim team.
You would have chosen an American artist.
That's right. The men should have done a video with an American artist as well.
Well, no, the men were featured in this too.
Well, there you go.
No. So
this is great, though. Like, it's amazing.
They should. You're right. They should have chose Taylor Swift.
She should have chose Taylor. God. But if you tell me Taylor Swift is Canadian at the end of the show, I would have believed you. Because this is another one that I would have thought, nope, of course, she's American.
Yeah, I had no clue either.
By the way, congratulations, Canada. We played a number of songs in 2 hours on the show this morning, and some of them were some pretty good artists. You are turning out some good talent.
I'm going to let you know right now, there's a few that are going to end up on the cutting room floor. You're like, oh, we didn't play them?
We've done Bryan Adams. We've done Rush. We've done Alanis Morissette. But Bare Naked Ladies is a Canadian. I found that out this morning. I didn't know a couple of others were Canadian. So congratulations, Canada. Well done. You've put out some pretty good music artists. We got one more hour left for the Throwback Thursday. So we continue with Sports Map Radio.